yay, oh yay, oh yay. The Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of Texas, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the state of Texas and this honorable court.
Thank you. Be seated, please. Good morning. The court has two matters on its oral submission docket today in the order of their appearance. They are docket number 090497, Tyler Scoresby, MD, versus Caterino Santillan individually and his next friend of Samuel Santillan, a minor from Tarrant County and the Second Court of Appeals District. And docket number 100581, O. Lee Todd III versus Doris Barnes individually and as independent executrix of the estate of Leon McNair Barnes, deceased, which comes here as a certified question from the United States Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit. The court has allotted 20 minutes per side for each of these arguments, and we will take a brief recess between the two. These proceedings are being recorded, and a link to the argument should be posted on the court's website by the end of the day today. The court is ready to hear argument in the first cause, 090497, Scoresby versus Santillan.
It please the court, Mr. Yanoff and Mr. Pratt will present argument for the petitioners. Petitioners have reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal. Mr. Yanoff will open with the first 10 minutes, and Mr. Hall will present the rebuttal.
Justices, may it please the court. This case is to Chapter 74, what Palacios was to Article 4590I. Once and for all, a case in front of this court to address the no report versus deficient report issue, and in doing so, ensure that the hard and fast deadline and mandatory dismissal for failure to timely serve an expert report as defined by the statute is carried out per the legislative intent. I'll be addressing issue one, whether some documents are so deficient that they constitute, in effect, no report and therefore fall within the Bodega scenario. Counsel for Dr. Dusick will be addressing issue two, whether the letter from Dr. Marable in fact fits into that category, the third category of reports or Bodega scenario, as Justice Johnson has called it. On issue one, respondent argues that this court lacks jurisdiction on two primary grounds. The first is because interlocutory appeals are final and therefore not reviewable by this court. And the second is because the trial court granted an extension, that is not reviewable based on 51.014A9 of the Civil Practice and Remedies Code. On the first part of the jurisdiction, this court has recognized for a long time that while interlocutory appeals are generally final, this court can always review whether the Court of Appeals properly exercised or denied its jurisdiction, which is exactly what happened here. This court has done this on Chapter 74 interlocutory appeals a number of times the last few years. In Bodega, this court reversed the Court of Appeals failing to exercise its jurisdiction. This court also looked at the jurisdictional issues on an interlocutory appeal in Lewis and Ogletree.
Let's say you're correct on the jurisdiction issue. Let's talk about your so-called hard and fast dismissal and the legislative intent. I thought the legislative intent was to let meritorious claims go forward and claims that aren't meritorious to be resolved at the trial court level.
You're correct, Justice Medina. This court long ago in Palacios, in interpreting Article 4590I, said in interpreting an expert report, the claim is supposed to have merit, and that is one standard by which it is to be determined.
And if it's a hard and fast rule, what's the purpose of the extension?
The purpose of the extension is to offer the trial court tremendous discretion in granting an extension for a merely deficient report. The question becomes, can a report be so deficient and so lacking in all of the elements required of a report that while a piece of paper has been timely served, it is in effect no report?
Where does it say that in the statute?
Well, the statute defines an expert report as needing four things.
Well, where does it say there's a third category, a report that, as Justice Willett and Justice Johnson said, meets that so-called third category? There's nowhere in the statute.
It does not expressly say that.
So it's a fiction.
I would respectfully disagree. 74.351C says that an extension is available when elements are found to be deficient. And if it's a fiction to say that there's a third category, then I would say it's also a fiction to say in Bodega that you can appeal an extension when one is granted when no report is timely served. The court in that case said if no report is timely served, then an extension is not available, and that decision is appealable because dismissal is mandatory. What we're simply arguing is if a report or a document is absent and or deficient in all four elements, it ceases to be a report as defined by the statute. It doesn't meet any of the elements of the statute, and it cannot be, by definition, a good faith
effort. What if it meets three elements? What if it meets three elements? Only one is deficient.
What we're advocating is if four elements are absent and or deficient, this would be a bright line test once and for all to give to courts of appeals and trial courts to tell them across the state that's the bright line test.
So to answer his question, if it has three elements and not four, then the trial court can grant an extension. But if it is missing all four, then it is no report. Is that your position?
I think the answer to that is yes. 74.351C contemplates that multiple elements can be deficient. And I really don't know how I could argue that three would be not enough, but two would be okay to grant an extension. If it contains nothing that a report is supposed to contain sufficiently, it is no report. And I would say anything short of that.
What do you mean by that? A report that fails to address each element, or a report that addresses them but not in enough detail so as to allow the trier of fact to determine that the case has some merit? I mean, what are you talking about? Where do you draw that line?
I think, again, if we get into drawing lines of are there elements absent versus deficient, it's a gray area. And I agree with Justice Medina that at some point that does become a fiction, because absent versus deficient can be in the eyes of the beholder. But a report that simply misses the mark on all four elements, whether one is absent and three are deficient, or all four are deficient, or all four are absent, whatever the case may be.
What if we have a dentist? What if this were someone who's, this letter that was submitted in this case, that was a dentist saying these doctors committed malpractice in doing ENT surgery? Is that good enough? Is that a report? We don't even have a purported expert in that case.
I think you can get into difficult scenarios when it's somebody that's clearly not qualified. But if we are to assume in your hypothetical that dentist who's clearly not qualified,
dentist may or may not be qualified. Some dentists are MDs also.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say you have to be absent all four, we just take someone who says these doctors were negligent, and that's going to get them. That's a good enough for a report, is your position?
Justice Johnson, remember, the issue is not whether the report is good enough. The issue is the document so deficient that a trial court cannot even exercise its discretion in considering an extension? There's no doubt that report you're discussing would be deficient.
No, I'm not talking about deficient. I'm talking about so that it is some report. I use poor phraseology. A report by someone who doesn't even purport to be an MD, no purporting to be qualified, but yet they just put down an opinion that these doctors are deficient, in your view, would still be some report.
Well, I don't think it's some report if all four elements are deficient, and I'm counting the fourth element being the qualifications of the expert. If that dentist or whoever it is, it may be an MD or not an MD, if they miss the mark on all four elements that the statute defines as an expert report, it ceases to be a report.
Let me ask this. If, let's say it's a no report case, but there is no interlocutory appeal taken, okay? Something was submitted, but it lacks all four elements, which is what you contend this case is. But let's assume there is no appeal taken, and the case is tried. And during the trial of that case, there's evidence, conclusive evidence, of each of the four elements showing medical malpractice. On appeal from that final judgment, would the doctor be able to go back and say the case should have been dismissed initially, so that judgment goes away? It's void, or at least can't be enforced. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. I don't think the defendant would be able to argue it's no report at that point, and it would depend on what's being reviewed. If the judge granted an extension,
that's the question. What would be reviewed? Would it be the failure to dismiss, or would it be the final judgment?
Well, the final judgment would certainly be appealable, but the Chapter 74 report would be irrelevant to the final judgment at that point. Okay. And whether or not the claim has merit would be irrelevant. At that point, you'd be appealing on sufficiency of the evidence.
Okay. In order to get a continuance, is it your position that a good report, a good faith report, has to satisfy Robinson Havner on all of the elements, or at least all of them have to be mentioned? What's the standard you think has to be met there?
But for the qualifications, well,
let's put qualifications to the side. Let's just talk about standard breach causation. Does the report have to satisfy Robinson Havner on all three?
I don't think the standard is as high as an evidentiary standard. It's a hurdle, but it's not a summary judgment hurdle, and it's not even a Robinson-Havner hurdle. If you get into that, then you're basically saying it's got to be trial-ready evidence. It doesn't have to be that. In numerous cases on causation, breach, and standard of care, it say that it simply has to lay it out sufficiently. It doesn't have to be the type of evidence you could use at trial. It can be conclusory in the sense of it relies on hearsay and those types of things.
Well, Rob, expert testimony can rely on hearsay. Are you saying there's a expert reports and satisfying the standard on the three elements we're talking about? There's a middle ground between conclusory and the Robinson-Havner standard that applies for expert reports?
Well,
it sounded like you said it needed to be more than just bare conclusory, but it doesn't need to satisfy Robinson-Havner. What does it need to satisfy?
Well, I think Robinson-Havner, you start getting into testing the expert's theory. And in all honesty, that's impossible to do from the four corners of a report. That's what depositions are for. The four corners of the report has to lay out the very things from Palacios to the cases the court has most recently decided. It has to lay out a standard of care.
But to what degree of confidence, though? If it's a naked statement that the standard of care is A, the doctor breached it and caused damages, three sentences, is that enough?
If it says nothing more than what you've said, that's conclusory. It's deficient.
So conclusory is not enough. Robinson-Havner's too much. What standard are you asking this court to establish?
Well, I think it's some of the very same things this court said in Palacios. What care was expected but not given? That's on standard of care and breach. That's the standard. What should have been done that was not done? On causation, it is not enough to use possibility. Now, you don't need to necessarily use reasonable medical probability or magic words, this court has also said, but it has to be more than possibility, because it says you have to show it caused the injury. But it is not tested, I don't believe, on a Daubert challenge or a Robinson-Havner type of challenge.
Is it a legal sufficiency question? Is it a question of legal sufficiency? I mean, what if there's some small break in causation, but it's a pretty thorough report otherwise? Would you say that's a no report scenario?
Well, I think it's difficult to evaluate it in legal sufficiency terms because there's not true evidence before the court. It's the four corners of the report is all that needs to be looked at. It's not legal or factual sufficiency. It's simply what is said in the four corners of the report, keeping in mind that you cannot make inferences, that it cannot simply make the bald assertion without support otherwise. And it has to tie the facts of the case, and it can be facts as the expert understands them. It doesn't need to be undisputed facts, but tie the facts to the actual care and a breach and say that actual breach caused the injury claimed.
Thank you, counsel. Any further questions? We'll hear from your co-counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. In my few minutes before the court, I want to take this discussion one step further, and let me first apologize for the raspiness. I developed a cough on the way in last night, so I'll try to be clear. But I'm going to take a step down the board now and talk about the letter that we do have from Dr. Marable in this case, and discuss the four elements that Mr. Yanoff discussed with the court and the sufficiency of those elements for purposes of crossing this Chapter 74 hurdle. Now, the standard, as Mr. Yanoff has suggested to the court that we are asking, is that when all four elements are either absent or deficient or both, then that simply doesn't meet the standard of an expert report under Chapter 74.
Define deficient.
Pardon me, Your Honor?
Define deficient.
Again, Your Honor, it's a gray area of absent and deficient.
Certainly it's not. I know it when I see it. Is it?
It could be.
Well, if it's a gray area, shouldn't that discretion be left to the trial judge?
It should, Your Honor, and that's, I think, why the statute is crafted the way that it is. But there has to be enough there to satisfy not only Palacios and the standard set forth in that case, but it still has to address each of those elements. And when a report doesn't do that to some degree, then that's simply not a report. And in this case, we have the first issue of qualifications. There's absolutely nothing in these three pages that sets forth Dr. Marable's qualifications. There was no CV filed along with this.
There's two things. He was a neurosurgeon and he was a diplomat or something.
It does, and that's all that it says, Your Honor. And
said nothing, but there were two things.
Well, that, I think, goes along the lines of that simply sets forth that he's a medical doctor and he's a neurologist.
But isn't that a line? I mean, you're saying that if there has to be nothing on these four elements, but that is something. So where is the line?
Well, I don't know that that is something, Your Honor. I think that simply puts forth that he's a medical doctor. But as this court has recognized in a number of cases, there is a line between one practice area that is qualified to, a doctor in one practice area that's qualified to render opinions on a given case. And while certainly there is, that's not a broad line, it's between them, and you don't have to have an expert in one specialty offering opinions on just that specialty.
Why shouldn't the rule be let's say we grant your argument there that being a neurosurgeon is not enough, and so there's a motion to dismiss, but there's also a motion to cure. The claimant says, I think I can fix that problem, Your Honor. Why shouldn't the line be that the trial court has discretion? If the report can be cured, then the plaintiff has an opportunity to do it. Because, the whole goal of this is to make sure that the claim is not frivolous, that it has some merit. So even when there's a deficiency, as you claim there is in this report with respect to qualifications, it's possible to cure that deficiency. So why shouldn't the trial court have discretion to permit that to happen?
I think the key word in Your Honor's question is if. If it is curable, and if we were dealing only with a qualifications issue here, then that might be the case. But we're not just dealing with that. Element two, standard of care, completely and wholly absent from this report. All that this report says with regard to standard of care and the paragraph that's been cited throughout all of the briefing is, my opinion is that Dr. Dusick violated the standard of care.
Okay, but I'm the trial judge, and I say, yes, this is deficient. Counsel, for the plaintiff, you have 30 days. I'm going to give you a maximum of 30 days to see if you can fix that. And we'll know, one way or the other, within 30 days, if you can fix that standard of care deficiency. And if you can, then the case ought to proceed because there's merit to it. And if you can't, then it's going to be dismissed. And this all happens pretty quickly. Doesn't that make sense?
It would make sense, Your Honor, again, if that was the only problem. But when all four elements, when the qualifications, when the standard of care, the breach, and the causation are either missing or not there, then that's simply not a curable report. If we were dealing with just this conclusory statement, And the trial judge said, go
fix
it.
Why isn't it curable, though? They could theoretically go back and obtain a more thorough report. So it is curable, hypothetically, theoretically, correct?
Your Honor, my time's up. May I answer?
You may answer.
I have a few moments. It would be curable only to the extent that that element could then be cured by a subsequent report. That physician or that expert might be able to go back and expand upon that conclusory statement.
So shouldn't they get 30 days to go and do that? If they can't, then they're out?
If it's just that one, Your Honor, maybe. But
what if all four were just somewhat not as thorough as they could have been, and it's hypothetically possible to go back and cure all of them? Shouldn't you get your 30 days?
Then I think the answer to that is no, Your Honor.
Mr. Yanoff said that 351C contemplates that more than one element can be branded deficient. So why is three good enough for an extension, but four is not?
Because the bottom line, Your Honor, is if every single element, if all four of them are absent or deficient, then that simply cannot meet the standard.
But the statute contemplates that more than one element can be deficient.
It does, Your Honor. But if all four of them are, then that simply can't fall in the category of good faith reports that are entitled to this type of extension to cure.
But there is a difference between absent and deficient in terms of evaluating whether it constitutes a report or a deficient report? Absent meaning not there versus deficient.
Well, I think there's certainly a difference, Your Honor, between not there and being deficient. But the bottom line is if all four of them are one or the other, then that's when the line has to be drawn. Your Honor, do you have any?
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
The court is ready to hear argument from the respondents.
The court, Mr. Smith will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the justices and distinguished counsel, it is my honor to be here on behalf of Samuel Santillan and his family at the place where I was fortunate to begin my career. This case presents the issue for interpretation. The legislature clearly provided if an expert report was filed and the trial court granted an extension, the appellate court had no jurisdiction to review the report. If the court finds that there is a third category of reports, then this report clearly satisfies that. In this case...
Why wasn't a CV attached?
I'm sorry?
Why wasn't a CV attached?
I'm not sure, but I believe there was some difficulty getting it from the doctor's office. Sometimes these issues and the reports are more important to the lawyers than the doctors who have practices themselves and don't necessarily understand the impact of these deadlines.
Well, but didn't you file a second letter from him dated that summer?
And in
that letter, CB indicated he testified quite a bit. So he knew what a deposition was, and this doctor is not new to the legal process.
I don't think he's new to the legal process. I just don't believe he's been involved in the legal process as of late. I'm not sure why the CV didn't appear, but as Justice, you point out, a CV was filed. A amended report was filed the day of the hearing, and the doctors had the opportunity to challenge that new report.
But the trial court was not considering the second one, was it? As I understand from the briefs.
They were not considering it. The doctors merely had the opportunity to challenge that, but rather than challenge the substance of the new report that addressed the areas that they complained of, they chose to fight the form of the first report.
Which brings another question. Your brief says that they have not challenged a second one, and their brief says they have challenged a second one. Which is it?
Well, I believe the record is that they have not filed a motion to dismiss based on that.
Okay. So at this point, there's no challenge at all to the second letter by this doctor?
There's no challenge, and there's certainly they have not sought challenged, nor have they sought a ruling from the judge challenging that order.
Going into the second letter, even though it wasn't considered, does this doctor say that he has ever performed this type of surgery or assisted in it or even seen one?
This doctor says in the second report that he has seen one in that he has treated patients that have come out of this type of procedure.
Well, he treats them after the surgery.
He does.
But he's not been, he didn't, as I read his report, he never he's a neurologist, not a neurosurgeon.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And a neurologist is an internal medicine person who does not operate, as I understand. Is that correct?
That's my understanding, Your Honor. He did actually teach at John Peter Smith, which is the hospital where Mr. Santillan was treated, and he taught doctors with regard to how to determine whether or not you need this actual type of surgery or another type of surgery and which doctor should handle it, which is one of his allegations where the standard of care was breached.
But isn't the standard of care how to do this surgery?
Well, the standard of care is two things. It's in his subsequent report, he has said it's how to do the surgery and it's who does this surgery. His opinion is that a neurosurgeon actually do the surgery. That's all set forth in the report that they have not sought a challenge of.
Okay.
Is there ever a situation where the trial judge doesn't have any discretion and needs to dismiss a report because, as opposing counsel said, if every element is absent, then it can't fall into a category of a good faith report? And I think that's a very compelling statement.
I would assert that the legislature has given us a bright line, and it really is a bright line that punishes lawyers who are lazy and rewards lawyers that show some diligence and file something called an expert report. In Badiga, the court said,
no matter what the content of that purported report is,
that is our position. That is the bright line that the legislature
has. Your bright line is anything that has the word report on top of it
can be a deficient report.
Okay. So if they file a stack of, if the 120-day deadline arrives, you wake up that morning, oh my gosh, I forgot to get a report. You scurry around. Say you file the medical record. Boom, here's a 2-foot stack of medical records. We're going to call that my report because it's all kind of in there somewhere. Is that good enough to get an extension?
Well, I would say that's the bright line the legislature's given us. However, you provided...
But you think it is good enough to get an extension?
I believe that it is enough for the court to give an extension. Now, that doesn't...
Is it enough for a court to... deficient enough for a court to deny an extension?
Like in the Waco case?
If in Justice Willett's example, you file what is clearly not expressly contemplated by the statute. It's a stack of medical reports, and you go to the trial court and you admit, yes, this is deficient. Judge, may I have an extension? The trial court says, no, this was clearly a bad faith effort. I'm not going to give you an extension. Doesn't that end the case?
Well, I think that in that case, which is not this case, I think the judge has some discretion on whether or not to give that extension. I think it's always good to have a record, unlike the case that the court is considering now, so you can determine what the judge did consider or what evidence is out there. If that's not enough, Justice Willett suggested in Ogletree that there at least be some accusation of wrongdoing, which we have here in the first report, and that would at least be sufficient enough to be a bright line if my first proposition is not sufficient. My proposition would be that at least it accuse some medical provider of wrongdoing.
Oh, in the Funderburk case, what we had in that case, and again, we couldn't reach the issue procedurally, but the purported report there was a letter from one doctor to another doctor thanking him for this referral of this patient, kind of describing generally her symptoms. Never accuses anybody of doing anything wrong, never wags a finger, never implicates any provider's behavior, yeah, top or bottom. Would that, thank you for this referral letter from Dr. A to Dr. B, be enough to warrant an extension? Can a judge ever be justified in denying an extension in that case?
Well, can a judge be justified in not granting an extension in his or her discretion?
Can a judge
dismiss
the case, no extension, your case is over?
Under some circumstances, yes. I think under that report. Well, I think that the judge is, I think what the legislature has done is they've given the trial judge the discretion to make that call about the extension. I think that's really what the legislature has done, is they've left that decision to the trial judge.
So you do seem to kind of come to a bottom line that there are some document that on its face is so kind of grossly substandard. You know, never accuses anybody of malpractice. There are certain documents that warrant dismissal. Yes or no?
I don't think that my reading of the statute, the legislature said if you file a report and it's deficient, you can get an extension and there's no interlocutory appellate
Counsel,
jurisdiction.
The statute also defines an expert report, and it's pretty clear that you have to state the applicable standards of care, the manner in which the care was rendered, how you failed to meet the standard, and the causal relationship. Does none of that have to be in your first attempt at a report? Do you just ignore that?
Well, in this case, we actually have some of those elements. Dr. Marable states that because the doctors nicked the cortical, had a cortical laceration, that they caused an injury, that was negligent activity, and that it caused, and he lists what that negligent activity caused in Mr. Santillan, the hemiparesis of the right side. So in this case, we actually have some of those elements.
But shouldn't it be, though, that your first attempt at a report should at least comply in some form or fashion with the definition of expert report that's in Chapter 74?
I don't believe that the language that the legislature used, I think they talked about expert report. And if an expert report is filed, then I think that the trial judge has the discretion to extend it because if it's deficient.
Well, but in order to even get to that threshold, I've attempted to comply with the definition of expert report in 74351R6. Here's my attempt. Shouldn't you at least address every component in some form or fashion of what the definition of an expert report is?
Well, ideally, however, if a party doesn't, then if it's deficient, then in the elements, and Justice Willett talked about that.
Just ignore the definition?
Well, no, I don't think lawyers should ignore the definition, and I think these are very complicated cases, and ideally, if you have a very cooperative expert witness who will sit down with you and go through the report, it should have those things. But the legislature gave a safety valve that if all of those elements or not all of those elements are met, then we can the trial judge can give that 30-day extension.
Is there a difference between the element being just deficient because the explanation wasn't thorough enough and an element being completely missing?
I believe the statute talks about deficient in the elements and talking about, and the way I read that is that one or all of the elements aren't present in the expert report. Again, I think it's what the legislature wanted was the counsel on behalf of the parties to at least try and file something, and they weren't going to reward, in the way the court interpreted the statute in Badiga, they weren't going to reward the lazy lawyer, but they might reward the diligent lawyer who files some sort of report.
But that position requires us to equate the word, or to include within the definition of the word deficient, the term absent or missing. I don't read deficient as including missing.
Well,
deficient means it's there, but it doesn't quite measure up.
Well, and I would argue a report that doesn't have arguably four elements. There have been four elements that have been designated, standard of care, breach, causation, and qualifications. If there's a report that doesn't have any of those, and in this case we have some of those, but for future cases, it can be deficient if the report doesn't have any of those.
In this case, standard of care, the statement of a standard of care is missing. It's not in the report, correct?
The statement of the standard of care in the first report is arguably missing.
You say it's inferred. You can infer it.
Well, I think the court has said that sometimes you can't infer it, but I think Dr. Marable clearly states that the cortical laceration by these two doctors is a breach of the standard of care. But I guess
you say the report clearly says that. It's not in here. It's inferred.
That's a matter of interpretation.
But it's not stated in here.
That's a matter of interpretation for the trial judge.
Read me the sentence where the report says that.
Yeah.
had it not been for Dr. Dusick and Dr. Scoresby's negligent activity in causing cortical laceration of this patient's left parietal lobe, he would not have needed further hospitalization. And
that's causation, or at least a conclusory statement about causation. Is it your position that states the standard of care?
It does not. It does not. It states the breach, but it does not state the standard of care, Doctor.
Now, are you familiar with Walker versus Gutierrez, 2004 case under the old law, 4590I?
I am vaguely familiar with it.
Now, the standards for getting a continuance were different, but in that case, we said if a report omits one or more of the elements, doesn't mention them at all, not in a conclusory fashion, then under some additional standards there, it said you don't get a continuance. Why shouldn't we require that for a deficient report on some elements, that it at least mention all of the elements and follow, at least in concept, Walker versus Gutierrez?
Well, because I think we have a new statute that's being interpreted, and as Justice Owen said in the women's hospital cases, also in 2004, and concurring and dissenting from the denial of those petitions for review, that the appellate jurisdiction in the new statute is narrower. And what we're focusing on here is the appellate jurisdiction. Furthermore, the court has also indicated in Ogletree, since Walker, that a report, if it's deficient, an extension can be granted and there's no jurisdiction. So
If it's deficient. But deficient and missing, I think, are two different things pretty clearly, aren't they? Missing, there's an element missing here, not just deficient, but missing in this case.
I think under the Bodega case, when there's no report, I certainly think that's clear from how the court has interpreted the statute. But I think that the statute talks about deficient in the elements, and it could be deficient in all of them the way it's written now. And this language is new, and that's why I think it's important for the bright line of the lazy lawyer versus the diligent lawyer that files something. Realize this case, we have some of the elements. We have the Ogletree situation where they argue it should have been a different doctor, but Ogletree said, oh, that's a deficiency that can be cured. And they could have attacked the new report. They could have attacked the new CV, and they chose not to do it.
How is a trial judge who's not a doctor supposed to know if the report can be cured or not? This is a complex surgery. One side's saying, this can be cured. And there's no additional experts, there's no neurosurgeon on the stand, there's no additional affidavits. The other side is saying, this absolutely cannot be cured. This case is frivolous. How's the doctor supposed to know what is possible to be cured in the context of complex medical procedures?
Well,
Is that what the statute contemplated, that the trial judge would have discretion to make that medical judgment?
I think the legislature said, we'll give the judge one 30-day discretion for 30 days, and that's it. So I think the way they solved that problem was, we'll give judges discretion to grant one 30-day extension, but not one 30-day extension after one 30-day extension after one 30-day extension. I think that's how they balanced that out.
I'm having trouble understanding your bottom line position, which may be a shortcoming on my end and not yours. Is it your position that if a plaintiff submits something, anything, before the deadline, that a trial judge has no discretion to stop the case at that point? If there's anything at all submitted that purports to be a report, regardless of content, the trial judge cannot dismiss that case. They have to give at least a 30-day extension to try to cure it.
I don't think they have to give a 30-day extension because the statute says a trial judge may. It does not say a trial judge shall.
Right.
So, but a trial judge may, if they address, or if the report is deficient, and I would argue the way it's written, it could be deficient in all four elements that we're talking about. But in this case, I'm arguing for future cases. In this case, Dr. Marable has written a book about the Wright brothers that at least mentions Orville, if not Wilbur. We meet some of the elements, if not, we probably don't meet standard of care.
But would you say a trial judge can exercise his or her discretion depending on the content of what is submitted? They can say, this is pitiful. I'm going to grant the motion to dismiss. No extension for you. And there are instances where that would not be an abuse of discretion.
I believe because the legislature included the word may, I think that's correct.
Even discretion can be abused. I mean, you can abuse your discretion. But you agree there are certain occasions where if the report is facially, laughably terrible, there's no charitable way to view it as a report. A trial judge can dismiss that case, and that would not be an abuse of discretion.
I think the legislature has invested that discretion in the trial judge. Just as in federal courts, the Congress has invested in a district court judge the right to remand, which there's no appellate jurisdiction to review. I think it's very similar. I think the legislature has invested that discretion in the trial judge, and a trial judge could look at a deficient report and say, there are no elements here. I am not in my discretion going to grant you an extension.
Couldn't the word may mean authorization rather than discretion?
It could, Your Honor.
And isn't that creating a third category, if you concede that?
No, I don't believe so, because that goes to, that's whether or not a trial judge can grant the extension, not whether or not there's a third category. A report can be filed, but a judge could decide, well, you filed a report, and it's deficient, and I'm not going to grant that extension.
Why isn't this like a, in terms of the standard, to look at this when in terms of the trial court's decision, why isn't this like a summary judgment? The trial court gets discretion and gets deference in situations where there are disputed questions of fact, and the judge and the jury can see the witness's face, and are they sweating as they're testifying? Do they look credible? Are they fidgeting? And credibility contests where they can hear the inflection of the voice. With the summary judgment, now we review those de novo. The trial court picks up a piece of paper, says this meets it or it doesn't. In this case, trial court picks up a piece of paper, an expert report, either it meets the statutory standard or it doesn't. There's no credibility contest. There's no, is the witness blushing or sweating? Why shouldn't we just say this is, we can look at the same piece of paper, the expert report, that the trial judge did and review it de novo? Why is there discretion that precludes us from looking at an expert report de novo in this Chapter 74 situation?
I don't know that there is discretion in reviewing the report. I think there is discretion in granting the extension.
Because of the word may.
Because of the word may, Your Honor. And I think these reports are really serve the function that Justice Hecht addressed in Transamerican to show that the cases have some merit and that they won't be dismissed if it doesn't justify the presumption that they lack merit. In this case, we have a amended report that has not been challenged in court. They haven't gotten a judge to say that the amended report is bad. That's their remedy, and they could have appealed that ruling and then saved all of the energy and time. If the court doesn't have a bright line, then it's going to encourage more interlocutory appeals, form over substance, instead of attacking the amended reports that really allow them to know what they're being accused of.
There are situations where cases can be legitimately dismissed without some indication of whether they have merit or not, or frivolous or not. If there's an expert report deadline and the case requires an expert by the plaintiff, and none is designated, that case gets dismissed, even if it's a very good case. There's no Transamerica standard imputed there.
I would argue if a report was filed late that showed all of the elements.
No, I'm talking about an expert for trial purposes, not an expert report.
Okay.
And if you miss the deadline on designating the expert, even a very good case gets dismissed because there's no evidence where the case requires expert testimony.
If no
Transamerica standard there at all.
Because the lack of expert justifies the presumption that the claim lacks merit.
It's because there's no evidence. I don't think right. There's a presumption, period. There's no evidence of the element.
Yes. I agree. It's consistent with Trenton.
Any further questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Mr. Hall will present the rebuttal for the petitioners.
May it please this honorable court.
Mr. Hall, before you get started, have you challenged the second report?
Yes, sir, we have.
What's the status of that?
It's still pending. If you need the dates, August 5th, Dr. Dusick challenged the second report, and on August 15th, Dr. Tyler challenged the second report, and motions for dismissal were filed. If the court would like, we could have a supplemental record sent out to show that, but it was challenged. The second report was challenged.
Thank you.
I'm going to suggest something for your consideration. There were some questions about whether or not, what is a deficiency? And I think that's a very, very good question. What is a deficiency? And going even a step further, how many deficiencies can you have before you don't have a report? Can I suggest one thing for your consideration? Could there be a fatal deficiency? And by that, let me give you an example and see what you think. We know that conclusions by themselves alone are not enough. And yet, in this report, there are some conclusions that may arguably cover one or more of the elements. But if a conclusion by itself, without anything else, is not enough, even though it's in the report, would that not be a fatal deficiency as opposed to just a deficiency that could be cured? And if you have a report that has nothing but fatal deficiencies or no mention at all, like we have here, then if it's no report at all by the definition because of that, then doesn't the trial court lose its discretion to grant an extension because there's no report as defined by Chapter 74 before him?
But isn't it also true that any deficiency is fatal?
I don't necessarily agree with
that.
Why
not? Let's say you don't cure, in that 30 days, you don't cure it. Isn't the trial court going to dismiss a report that is insufficient as to elements?
Yes, sir. Yes,
so
sir.
Any deficiency is fatal. But the legislature said there are going to be circumstances where a lawyer files on behalf of his or her client a report where the elements are deficient, which means they don't qualify as an expert report. And in those circumstances, the trial court has discretion to grant an extension.
Here's what I mean by fatal deficiency, and it answers your question. Any deficiency can potentially be fatal if it's not cured, but I think there's some deficiencies that cannot be cured, such as in this report, a conclusion, a bare conclusion. That's what I mean by a fatal deficiency, one that cannot be cured. Let's use an example. In this report, Dr. Marable says the defendants were negligent. But let's say that he did define a standard of care, just for purposes of argument. Let's say he did supply something other than a conclusion on causation. That would be a deficiency, I think, that could be cured. What do you mean by negligent? How did he violate the standard of care? What did these doctors do that they shouldn't have done? That could be curable, I would think. When I use the term fatal deficiency, just for your consideration, I'm talking about a deficiency that can't be cured, such as nothing but a conclusion only, with no factual discussion, no elaboration, just a bare conclusion.
Why can't you go back and add in the facts when you get that extension?
Because in order to get an extension, before we ever get to that point, you have to have a report. And if all you have is two bold conclusions and two elements missing, like we have here, there is no report, and therefore you can't grant an extension. That's really what we've been trying to argue. We're trying to get you to consider the possibility that a report can be fatally deficient or have no elements whatsoever to where it is no report, and therefore there is no discretion vested in the court to grant that extension. You can argue, I guess, it's not a good faith effort. I guess you can make that argument, but I'm going a step further. I'm saying it is absolutely no report. It doesn't fit the definition. It doesn't give you the elements. And going to what you brought up earlier about, well, you know, our poor trial judges, you know, they're not doctors. No, that's true. They're not doctors. But they can sure look at a report and see if a standard of care is defined. They don't have to agree with the definition. They're not asked to say whether the definition is good enough. They just have to look and see if there's a standard of care defined, if there's an explanation on how it was breached, and if there's an explanation on how that breach led to the damages. Now, a trial judge can certainly do that, but he couldn't do it in this case because all he has is two conclusions and two missing elements. And so that's basically what we're trying to present. This is no report at all, and there shouldn't have been any discretion in the trial court. Thank you so much. Can I answer any other? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. The cause is submitted, and the court will take a brief recess.
All rise.